want you to be relaxed because I want you to enjoy the next few minutes. And I'm going to begin by saying this invitation was actually issued 8 years ago, before I came to St. Martin's. Captain Cernan and I had met in Pensacola, Florida at an event, and I invited him to speak to my church in Pensacola. That didn't work out, so I decided to come to Houston, and maybe it would be easier to get him to come to speak. So I am really delighted to have, really for me, an American hero in our presence here at St. Martin's. During 20 years as a naval aviator, including 13 years with the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, Captain Eugene Cernan left his mark on history with three historic missions in space. As the pilot of Gemini 9, a lunar module, the pilot of Apollo 10, and commander of Apollo 17. After flying to the moon not once, but twice, he also holds the distinction of being the second American to walk in space and the last man to have left his footprints on the lunar surface. Among his numerous honors, the most significant are the Navy Distinguished Flying Cross, Distinguished Service Medal with Star, the NASA Distinguished Service Medal, FAI, International Gold Medal for Space, induction into the U.S. Space Hall of Fame, enshrinement into the National Aviation Hall of Fame, Naval Aviation's Hall of Honor, and International Aerospace Hall of Fame. Captain Cernan received a Bachelor of Science degree in Electrical Engineering from Purdue University and a Master of Science degree in Aeronautical Engineering from the United States Naval Postgraduate School. He authored the book, The Last Man on the Moon. As an aside, I think I hold the last copy that we sold in our bookstore because they quickly went off of our shelves, which tells of the fear, the love, the sacrifice demanded of the few men who dared to reach beyond the heavens for the biggest prize of all, the moon, soon to be a documentary on his life. Please welcome to our pulpit Captain Eugene A. Cernan.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you also very much. Dr. Levinson, you're too kind. I appreciate it, and I want you folks to know I am very unaccustomed to be standing in a pulpit like this. But it's wonderful that you're all here, and I want to thank Dr. Levinson for the invitation to be here tonight to share with you my thoughts, particularly concerning those young men and women who are serving our country throughout the world today in some very, very hostile places, who have given so much and continue to do so for this nation of ours. And I also was asked by Dr. Levinson to share with you some of my feelings and thoughts, to reflect, if you will, on how my space voyage to the moon may very well have reinforced my belief in our Creator. I cannot tell you, President and Barbara Bush, how special you've made the evening by your presence here, in addition to your presence being a testimonial to your commitment, your belief in all those young men and women who are in harm's way today. Thank you so very much. It is indeed an honor. I'm not sure most of you know this, but there's another special guest that Reverend Levinson invited to be here tonight, but unfortunately, he's not going to be here because of circumstances. You see, the Pope the Pope was headed to Houston from Rome. You know, we had that big Alaskan norther that came down. The weather got pretty bad, foggy this afternoon. It so happens that he couldn't get into Houston, and they had to land in Corpus. But he still was intent on getting here. So we had a limousine waiting to drive him up here because he was unable to fly. And so he got in the limousine. He said, "Hurry up, driver. I cannot be late for the tribute at St. Martin's. I promised I'd be there." So he gets in the car. And, of course, the driver's got the Pope. The driver's driving up 59, 55 miles an hour. And the Pope says, "Driver, I'm late. I've got to be there." Driver speeds up to 60 miles an hour. And the Pope, he may have had a little naval aviator in him because he's a little impatient, by the way. He said, "Driver, stop the car." He said, "Driver, stop the car." He says, "You get in the back. I'm going to drive." Well, you can guess what happened next. He's going up the freeway at 85 miles an hour. And sure enough, you know, you've all been there, done that. And this policeman pulls him over, and Pope rolls down the window, and the policeman looks up and says, "You're going a little excuse me, wait a minute, I've got to call my chief." So the officer says, "Chief, I got a real problem here." He says, "What is it?" He says, "I got this guy going 85 miles an hour and a 65 mile an hour." He says, "Well, give him a ticket." He says, "I can't do that." He says, "Why can't you do that?" He says, "Well, chief, he's a very special person. He's driving for a very special person." And the chief says, "Well, special, who could that be?" And he says, "You know, how many special people? Is it an astronaut?" He said, "No, I said a real special person." He says, "Is it Russell Levinson? He was down in South Texas hunting this weekend, and I know he had to get back, and I don't know whether he was driving or flying." He says, "No, chief, I think it was someone more important than Reverend Levinson." He says, "Well, the Reverend was hunting down there with Jim Baker, and Jim Baker was supposed to be a presenter at this event tonight." And he says, "I'm sorry, chief, that's getting up there pretty high, but I think it's more important than Jim Baker." And he says, It can't be President Bush. I know he was supposed to attend there tonight. And you know, there's nobody more important in the world than the President of the United States." And the police officer says, "Chief, I think you're getting close. All I know is he's got the Pope for a driver." All right. Okay, we need to get serious now. You know, it's been said by many, and you've heard it before, that freedom is the burden of our heritage. And that's why we're here this evening, to honor, to remember, to pay homage to all those who carried that burden on our behalf. We are here to honor and remember those who dared to take the oath to their God and commitment to defend their country. You know, I was just a young boy during World War II, but I do remember it. We have been defending our freedom from tyranny for over 200 years. But it was World War II that I became aware of the hardships and the significance of that greatest generation. One of those is certainly with us tonight, who sacrificed what it took to preserve the freedom and defend the freedom for the rest of us who followed in our footsteps. I can remember as a kid seeing these stars in the windows of average homes throughout the neighborhood where I lived. There were blue stars and there were gold stars. And the blue stars were telling people that there is a son, a brother, a father, a daughter who may very well have been serving this country in a faraway country. A gold star reminded all of us, even at that point in my life, that that father, that daughter, that son, that brother would not be coming home. But the thing I remember most about those days are those unsung heroes of our time that were making those flying machines of World War II do the impossible. These were unsung heroes who are now indeed icons of our nation. That first caught the attention of a young 8-year-old boy, and it then stirred my passion, inspired my dream to someday, hopefully, be able to do what they did. And as I look back today, as impossible a dream as it could have been, it may be that inspiration. Maybe that passion that I stirred was the beginning of my journey to the stars. And then there were those of the Korean War who fought the forgotten war. Korean War, the forgotten war that fought and died for the freedom that all of us here today, could fulfill our dreams. However, much closer to home for me were my friends and my crewmates of the Vietnam era. So many with whom I flew and shared so many great times and so many memorable days. Brothers, many who spent what must have seemed like an eternity, at least like a lifetime, in the prisons of Hanoi. And then others who were there who never came home to enjoy the freedom for which they gave their lives. Those folks fought my war. It was all happening, fate determined that I should be elsewhere. It is to them, those of the Vietnam era, that I owe an overwhelming debt of gratitude. It is to them that I will always remain eternally indebted. In more recent times, Jim Lovell, Neil Armstrong, and I had an opportunity on 3 separate occasions to visit the young servicemen and women in Iraq and Afghanistan. We made those 3 visits, and it really brought something home very loud and clear to me. That's when I realized the undeniable commitment and dedication of today's generation that we have asked to go places that we didn't even know existed. Young folks, I remember walking to the chow hall with a young man, and he was carrying his flak jacket and helmet to the chow hall. And I remember, and we met with young women, young girls, dressed in camouflage fatigues, carrying M4 automatic weapons over their shoulder. And in some cases, those weapons were longer than those young girls were tall. And there they were. Some of them were young enough to be our grandsons and granddaughters. And they were volunteering to serve their country in some faraway places I am convinced they never even heard about until they got there. And they did it all with a smile on their face. That's the caliber of the young men and the young women we have in the armed forces today. That truly is something I can never forget and represent something special about this nation of ours. I'll tell you one story. When we walked in a room and these young soldiers, sailors, Marines, Air Force, realized that was Neil Armstrong. They were mesmerized. Unbelievable. And I remember one young Marine comes up to Neil and he says, "Mr. Armstrong," this is a true story, "Mr. Armstrong, how did you feel when you were buzzing across the rocks on the moon with only 15 seconds of fuel left. And Neil had a habit, vintage Neil Armstrong. I wish you all could have met him. He had a habit. He says, well, he says, young man, he says, you know, when the gate says empty, we all know there's a gallon or two left in the tank. I'm proud of these young men and young women. I wish I had an opportunity to serve with them. But I'm going to send my proxy. We have our oldest grandson is now at the Naval Academy and will soon join the ranks of that generation. Now let me talk a minute about going to the moon, because it did in fact give me some closure on my spiritual beliefs. As a young boy, I grew up like most of us did. I went to church, made my first Holy Communion, was confirmed. I went to confession because my mom told me to. I believed in God, as most youngsters do, but I never really understood. I never really grasped the sense of a creator. I never really understood where it all began and what it was all about. That is, until fate sent me to the moon. In reflecting on those days, looking back, there's two space programs. And I had a chance to see them both. One is in Earth orbit, and one is when you go somewhere. In Earth orbit, fabulous place to be. You fly 18,000 miles an hour. You fly around the world in 90 minutes. You fly through 16 sunrises and 16 sunsets every 24 hours, and they were overwhelmingly beautiful. You fly over a river, a city, a coastline. If you're lucky, you might even get a glimpse of your own hometown. Walked across, not well, as a matter of fact, I did. I walked across the ocean, and the Atlantic Ocean, in 15 minutes. It's an incredible experience. But then I had a chance to go somewhere. I had a chance to go to the moon. And I discovered there were two space programs. Technically, they're different. Philosophically, they're different. And spiritually, they're different. Because when you go to the moon, in a short few hours, that horizon in Earth orbit, the Earth's horizon, it just slowly curves. When you go to the moon, after a few hours on the way, and you look back at the Earth, that horizon somehow closes in and around and upon itself. And your window is filled with a magnificent picture of the Earth. Very strange and yet very familiar. Because instead of flying around the Earth every 90 minutes, instead of flying through a sunrise and a sunset, you're sitting back and watching them happen on opposite sides of the world all at the same moment. You're not sure whether you're looking through distance or time. I remember specifically looking on my first trip out there, from the turquoise blues across the entirety of this North and South American continent, as we just heard in the songs, across those fruited plains and the purple majestic mountains into the deep, dark blues of the Pacific Ocean. And I looked for the strings that were holding it up. Why didn't it tumble? Why didn't it move aimlessly out there in space? You see, it was surrounded. We were in daylight on the way to the moon, but we were surrounded by the blackest black you can conceive in your mind. I didn't say darkness. Darkness is man-made. I said blackness. Infinity. Call it what you would like. I call it the endlessness of space and the endlessness of time, and I guarantee you, it does exist because I saw it with my own eyes. And out there, almost within reach, three-dimensionally, is the multicolored blues of the oceans and whites of the snow and the clouds of this earth of ours. From the icebergs of the North Pole to the snow-covered mountains of the South. And two things happen on the way. Number one, the earth grows very small, very, very quickly. Until when you get to the moon, you cover it up with something smaller than the palm of your hand. But it also rotates on an axis you can't see. Because every 12 hours, if you're headed out that way for a destination that you can't see, it's, by the way, Mr. Hunter, that's the longest lead shot you can take. But we made it. You watch that world turn. You're looking at the other side of the world every 12 hours. You got to come to grips with that. That's when I said philosophically, it's a different space program. And then spiritually, as you look out at the three-dimensional blackness, and there's home, there's life, past, future, present, everything you can understand and recognize. It's just too perfect and too beautiful to have happened by accident. I came to the conclusion on my first trip to the moon that this earth of ours, this place we call home, is indeed just too beautiful to have happened by accident. There has to be somebody bigger than you and bigger than me, our God, our Creator, who put it all together. And then I had a chance to go back, and I covered that last 47,000 feet to the lunar surface. And on the way, I challenged the feeling I had the first time. And all I did was reinforce it. I reinforced the feeling I had. I now begin to understand the things I didn't understand as an 8-year-old boy. I didn't have all the answers, but I felt closer and knew why I believed in the Creator, because I saw part of His creation. And when I went to the moon and that last 47,000 feet and actually touched the surface, I realized all of a sudden I'm on another body out there in the heavens. You're in zero gravity the whole way. All of a sudden, this is not Earth. I'm in another heavenly body we've chosen to call a moon, somewhere out there. The next 3 days were very interesting, but then it came time to go home. And I was going up the ladder, and I looked down at my final footprint. I knew I wouldn't come in this way again, but somebody would. Somebody at some time in the future. I didn't think it'd be this long. But as I said when I left, God willing, we shall return. And we will. And I started up the ladder. And I didn't want to leave. Very nostalgic moment. And I wanted to know what the meaning of us being there was. I don't mean us. I mean us. As a generation of people on this earth. I knew we were an extension of technology, but what did it mean to call another body in this universe our home for 3 days of our lives? I look at the earth over my shoulder on the top. It stayed there. We were again on the moon in sunlight the whole time, surrounded by this blackness, and the earth stayed in the same spot on the top of the mountains in the southwestern sky. And I looked at it and I said, you know, I may be seeing the earth as only we've seen it before through the words of poets or the paintings of artists or maybe through the minds of philosophers. But it was real. I was really here. I asked myself, am I really here at this moment in time and space? And the answer was indeed yes. I wanted to stop the clock. I wanted to push the freeze button and stop time so that I could better understand. Having been the last one to leave the moon, I needed to come home with something. I needed to tell you something. I needed to say, here's what it was like. And I didn't have an answer. I wanted to reach out and grab that beautiful blue jewel in the sky and tuck it in my spacesuit, bring it home and say, here's what it's like. Here's what it means. But I couldn't. And I finally came to a conclusion, and I don't know what brought me to this conclusion, maybe the environment and where I was and what I was doing, that unbeknown to me at the time, I had been sitting on God's front porch for 3 days of my life. I witnessed, I bore witness, bared witness to a small part of his creation, the universe, which includes you and me. So I come home with that and only that. I sat on God's front porch, and his creation is indeed real. Now, I want to just close with, let me just say one other thing. When it came time to leave, I only had one way of getting home. And those of you who know me, or those of you who are acquainted with naval aviators, Air Force, pilots and aviators in general. Number one, we're very impatient. Number two, we're slightly arrogant. And number three, we claim that we're in control of our own destiny. But when you get ready to come home from the moon, you have some doubts about that. You only have one way home, and that one way is there's no round trips. And so I did like, I guess, I grew up doing when I needed help. When I needed help, I said a prayer. I said an Our Father and a Hail Mary in hopes that God was listening. Apparently he was, because here I am. And so, until then, I indeed did think I was in control of my own destiny. But looking back at the role that faith played in my life, I realize that one's fate can only be determined by our God. I often ask myself, why me? Why me? Why wasn't I in a Hanoi Hilton for a good part of my life? Why? And I've been in Arlington a number of times. I've got some friends and colleagues here. Why? Why is it not me beneath one of those white headstones? Why? Why did I walk on the moon and others could have or should have, but didn't? Those are questions for which I have no answer, and I'm sure that those are questions that only God himself can answer for me. Now let me close with a very short story, true story again. We have a granddaughter, 22 years old, one of those diehard Aggies, and have a little place out in Kerrville. And I took her out there when she was about 5 years old. Wanted to show her the night sky with the stars, and it happened to be a full moon. And I just took her out there, carried her out there, 5 years old. And she said, "Oh, Poppy, there's Poppy's moon." That's what all the grandkids call it, Poppy's moon. She said, "Oh, there's Poppy's moon." And I thought, this is the time. So I decided I was going to explain to this five-year-old that Poppy had been to the moon. And I said, "You know, Poppy got in his rocket ship and he went to the moon. And Poppy stayed there for 3 days. And Poppy even put your mommy's initials in there." And I was telling her all things. "And you know, the moon is way, way far out in the sky.
And I peppered her with a few of those questions, and she just sort of looked at me, didn't say much. And then her final words, they're not final, but her words at that point in time, really shook me to the core. She says, "Poppy, I didn't know you went to heaven." I had no answer other than to say, "Hey, punk, yeah, I think Poppy really did go to heaven." I just want to thank you again, Reverend Levinson, for the opportunity to be here, particularly not just in the presence of all of you folks, but in the presence of President Barbara Bush. I cannot tell you what a special treat and honor that is, not just for me, but for all of us. I can only say, God bless all those young men and women, past, present, and future, who we pay tribute to here tonight. Those who are willing and voluntarily defend our nation all over the world. They are indeed the most explicit example of American exceptionalism. God bless all of you, and thank you.